This is Candace Ellis and Al Sprague on July 8th, 2011 at the Panama Canal Reunion in Orlando, talking about life and adventures in the Panama Canal Zone. So we can start from the very beginning. How did you come to be in the zone, or how did your family find themselves there?
My father and mother were in the Depression. It was in the 30s. And my dad used to, they were so poor that my mom used to make him a banana sandwich. And then he would, on the way to work or after work, he would stop in for a cup of tea. And he'd say, don't put the tea bag in the teacup. So he'd take the tea bag and he'd put it in his pocket, and he'd take the warm water to the table and he'd put ketchup in it and have tomato soup. Then he'd take the tea bag home and my mom and him would have tea together. So they didn't have much money, and they had my sister Joni, who's here running around too. She's 5 years older than me. But they met this couple, Peggy Corrigan, who was married to Alwin De Leon, where I got my name, Alwin, from. And it was Peggy De Leon. They were married. He was up in the United States. he had to spend 6 months working in the United States to become an American citizen, because he was from the West Indies, one of the Dutch islands out there. Excuse me. Anyway, they became friends, and they saw the plight of my parents, and so Alwin fixed up, got some kind of a, him into my dad introduced to the Texaco Oil Company in Panama. So my dad borrowed $500 from my grandmother, and back then it was a lot of money. And he got on the old Ancon with my mom, who was pregnant with me, and they went to Panama, and I was born in Colon, Panama. So that's how I came to be born. I was started in the U.S. and born in Panama. Anyway, he worked for the Mount Hope tank farm of Texaco Oil Company. They had these tanks of gasoline, whatever, oil. And he worked for them for a year. Then he went over to the customs the Customs Bureau for Pan-Canal. And he got on with Pan-Canal. And he worked with them, and the next thing he got into the Inspection Bureau. And then from the Inspection Bureau, he went into the accounting branch. My mother told me she used to put all the books on accounting and everything in the bathroom, took all the other books out, because that was the only material to read. And my dad really got interested in accounting. So he worked his way up to assistant chief auditor of the Panama Canal. They never would let him become chief because he didn't have a college degree. And that'd be a lesson to people who don't want to get their degree. You know, there's still that animosity out there, you know. But anyway, so from there we moved over to the Pacific side. That was the Atlantic side. We moved to the Pacific side, and that was before World War II. I was born in 38.
38, okay.
And I remember Pearl Harbor. I remember everybody running around. I was only 3 years old.
Young.
But my dad, I remember him building air raid shelters underneath the house, these old wooden houses, sandbags. Mm-hmm. They put sand, everybody got in together, and we had blackouts. You had to put the screens down and turn off the lights. You use a flashlight at night or something. And you'd actually drive sometimes with just no light in your car, you know. it was actually, you know, being a kid in a war, you grew up thinking war, you know, and And it's, I can't remember when we weren't in a war, so it's no mystery to me why we're not, why we're in a war. I think it's a great country. I would rather be an American than anything. And I do have dual citizenship, though, and I love being Panamanian also. Mm-hmm. Panama is, I just love it.
Do you go back often?
Yeah, we go back every other year or every year. My wife, she was born down there, and her parents were born down there, too. Mm-hmm. And her father, who came back and lived in Panama, was a torpedo plane pilot in the Navy during the Second World War. And he sank three ships, and he was out in the Pacific. And he got the Distinguished Flying Cross, and two air medals, and he was in the group that started the Blue Angels. But he got out of the service. He said he had enough of war. So they let him go. But the rest of the guys, his group, they went into they were a war bond tour, mm-hmm. and they used to put on performances, and that's how it started. But anyway, see, all of the canal zone was so intermingled with each other. It's almost like everybody's related in some way or another, you know. And I feel like I'm related to the Corrigans because the Corrigans got me down to Panama. Well, Peggy Corrigan and Alwin De Leon, but mm-hmm. she was a Corrigan, so I met all the other Corrigans, and my dad met the Corrigans, and, you know, we were always on best of terms. And so I always been very close with the Corrigans. They're a wonderful bunch of Irishmen. They're real Irish, too. Mm-hmm. I was a sickly kid. I had abscesses and, you know, general things kids have, tonsillitis and all that. Mm-hmm. But I liked keeping in shape and running and weightlifting and all that. So I stayed in good shape till I hurt my back. But that's because of all the things I did. Mm-hmm. You know, I brought it on myself. But is there anything special you want to
hear? Sure. So you were born in 1938 in Cologne, and you were raised there until when? When did you leave?
Well, I was 3 years old mm-hmm. when we moved to the Pacific side.
Okay. And then when did you ultimately leave? Just trying to get a time frame.
When did I what?
When did you leave?
Oh, the zone? To go to live in the States?
Uh-huh.
1989.
But so
first
you were...
The first time mm-hmm. I left in to go to college in 1957. Mm-hmm. I went to Mississippi Southern College, and I got almost 2 years in there, and I got kicked out. It's all right. It wasn't all my fault either. Mm-hmm. I mean, the teacher had something to do with it, but they kicked me out. Anyway, that just made it good for me to go to another school, a better school, in American University in Washington, D.C. And I got a bachelor's and a master's from there. In art.
Oh, neat. What kind? What medium?
Well, everything. Mm-hmm. Master's of Art and Arts. I mean, sculpture, art history, painting, drawing, you name it. The only thing I haven't done is lithography, because I never had a machine where I could do it. Mm-hmm. But I've done everything else, just about.
Okay, well, so from 1938 to 1957, you know, you were in the zone, so that's a good amount of time. You know, you must have had a lot of different experiences just with schooling. So why don't we start, you know, with your experiences in grade school and high school and what that was like.
Well, I remember a lot of fighting.
Between the boys or between everybody?
No, just boys. I mean, you know, there's always a bully. Mm-hmm. There's always a bully waiting for you.
Uh-oh.
I don't know about girls, but I know guys. And I don't know. I used to wonder, how do bullies get out of class so early? Totally. They're waiting at the door, you know. And there's somebody in the back door, and you're in class, and they're going like this, you know. And so the guy next to me goes...
Not me.
And I go,
he's pointing at you?
So I go out and get my black eye or whatever it was, you know. But I mean, it was, that's the way it was. A lot of fighting and until I got into high school. And then I got bigger and you know, and started to fight back a little.
Which high school did you attend?
Balboa High School.
Okay.
Actually, that's why I had to get the master's degree. Because the school system was so good down there. We were on New York Regents tests.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that.
And they picked the highest evaluation they could. And the teachers had to have master's degrees to teach down there in high school.
Wow.
And I don't know about elementary school, maybe or not. But anyway, I couldn't go down there and teach school unless I had a master's degree. So I had to stay on longer in the States and get my master's. But I taught 4 years in Arlington County in a junior high school with my bachelor's, and then I went, worked after school and summers and part, you know, whenever I could, and worked on my master's and
got. So you could go back to teach?
Yeah, I wanted to go back. It's magical. It's magical. But anyway, I actually went back and I taught in Carundo Junior High School, but I went over and taught in Balboa High School. In the same room I taught art in the same room that I got kicked out of art in.
Oh my goodness.
I was kind of a pain.
What did you do to get kicked out of art class?
It's hard to remember. I think I made some boy blue by throwing paint on him or something. I don't know. Or I kicked the door in. It was just, you know, something annoying. You know,
Did you have to kick anybody out of art class?
Huh?
Have you ever had to kick anybody out of art class?
Well, I had one problem with one guy who was the best, one of the best of all the artists. I'm not mentioning names, you know, or anything, but I think it probably had something to do with drugs or something. You know, his brain wasn't functioning right, and I just thought the kid was great, but he just got out of control. I mean, you know, when you can't even talk to anybody without him jumping up and down like a gibbon or something like that, you know, you got problems. And then one kid, I allowed him to all come into class and watch this one guy's, all the kids that had study hall or something could come to my classroom this one day and watch the surfing slides that this one guy took and explain things. So, and we're all sitting in there. Of course, all the surfers got out of school somehow, and they're in there. And I looked down and I walked over to this kid. I said, "What's in that glass?" He goes, "Beer." I said, "You're going to get out of here. We're going down to see somebody." I said, "That's it, kids." I had to.
Yeah.
He ruined it for everybody.
How old was he bringing beer to class?
I think he was probably 17 maybe.
That is very bold.
Yeah, well, you know, he was on something too. Well, you know, and here's the thing. A lot of kids, there were the heads and the boozers. The heads were on marijuana. The boozers were on beer or whatever. And they did their thing, okay? Now I see kids that were, you know, you're grown up, they have kids and all, they're doing fine. And I can only think of one guy that really, you know, messed up his life. But the rest of them, they got away from it and they did fine.
Get over it, grow up a little, yeah.
Yeah, so sometimes I think people get a little bit too, you know, it's certain people, it'll kill them. You know, it their personality or their mental makeup. But most of the kids, they got through that period of their life, and they didn't want that stuff anymore.
Yeah. When you were there in high school, was there a lot of hard partying like that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, not with me, but I used to go down to the yacht club and drink beer, you know, after school or on Saturdays or something like that.
Yeah, describe like an average Saturday night for a high schooler in the zone.
Down there?
Yeah.
Go out and drink some beers, and actually, when I was in high school, I don't think I even had a girlfriend. I had a Once in a while, I take a girl out, but I didn't seem to be too interested in me. I was a little nutty. And I think a lot of that has to do with the way I am, what I make and what I do and paint. And, you know, I'm not, probably not normal.
It's good to be that way, though.
Well, maybe. Yeah. I'm bipolar. I'm manic depressive. Okay. I've been like that all my life. And I don't think I remember really a happy day until recently when my wife has gotten me some new medication and used Abilify. That's a good ad for Abilify.
Yep.
But
yeah,
the Abilify took the other medications and it made them work better.
Yeah, I've seen the commercials for it.
Yeah,
it's kind of
great. Right?
Yeah.
But
You dealt with that all throughout high school?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was nuttier than a fruitcake. But I'm not saying, I still did all the things I wanted to do, you know.
Right.
And I still was always trying to chase a girl here and there, but I just was out of luck, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it was I didn't conform. And I think girls at that age like more conforming people, but, you know, more steady in their lives, you know. I think if a woman's been divorced 3 or 4 times, maybe they're not so picky, you know. But when I was young, I would do crazy things, you know.
Like what? Do you have stories?
Well, even when I was teaching school down there, I still liked doing crazy. I wrote a book called A Clear Blue Line, and it's pretty dirty. But it's the way we were when we were in our, our 30s. And as far as girls, as far as diving, we did a lot of diving, free diving, where you go down and you just use a snorkel.
Yeah.
And, you know, you either the fish wins or you win, you know. But we'd shoot big fish, you know. Mm-hmm. And in water, you couldn't see the bottom. Now, this isn't going to go into the Pan Canal record, is it, or anything?
I mean, I can have it edited out, if you'd like, but
well,
it's not...
No, it doesn't matter.
I know it's a bit unrelated, but it's not... If you don't want it in...
No, it's just that I don't like sound like I'm tooting my horn.
No, I'm interested in it. I do a lot of reading, so, I mean, it's
well,
all... Yeah.
Let me give you an idea of just how crazy we were about it, you know. I had the Hong Kong flu. It was a bad flu that went around back then. And I coughed so hard that I got a hernia. It popped out. So they were going to have to operate on me, but they said, I don't want you going to work. I said, well, I have to go to work. I teach school. And I can't just say I'm not going to work for a week, you know. So they said, well, keep your legs up on a chair, you know, and don't do anything. So that weekend, the water was cold and perfect for fish. And I just put a wetsuit on. A wetsuit's tight, you know. And I put that on. It was cold anyway. So, and that held the hernia in. So I went diving with a bunch of guys. And we went out to Bona and Otoki Islands. It's about 27 miles from Panama. And I shot we used to call them Jewfish, but they call them Goliath grouper now. You have to be politically polite, you know. Anyway, I shot him, and he took off and went down, and in this place where I was, it was 100 feet deep, and the line got tangled around me, and I went down with him 100 feet. So I got untangled when I hit the bottom, and I started up, and I got up about 50 feet, and I had to breathe. And I said, I remember, you know, I'm a sort of excitable person and all that, but when something happens, I calm down. I just, that part of my life, you know, me shuts down. I said, you got to get air. One drop of water, you're dead. I said, where am I going to find air? Where am I going to find air? I was probably going, where am I going to find air, you know? And I said, my mask. So I leaned my head back, and water ran down whatever water was in the mask, and I just went, and I sucked through my nose as hard as I could, mm-hmm. flatten that mask up against my face. Well, that assuaged the urge to breathe. It didn't give me a lung full of air, but it gave me enough so that I could go on. Mm-hmm. And I went on, and I got about 25 feet more. I needed air again. And the mask had, decompressed a little bit. And so I sniffed again, and I came up just taking it easy. Mm-hmm. And everybody was laughing, you know, nervous laughter. They said they were dividing my gear up. They're gonna, you know, I get this. But I was down over 5 minutes. That's a long time.
Oh my goodness.
I didn't realize how long I was down.
Because what's the record for?
Oh, I don't know.
Not that.
People go diving.
Yeah,
for,
I don't know.
They go diving. Some people can dive for 20 minutes. I don't know. But mm-hmm. see, and I was trying to breathe through my mask too. Mm-hmm. So I had to untangle myself. First I was down, and then I saw the fish, he shot him. Mm-hmm. He pulled me down, then I had 100 feet to get back up. So all of that, this was going on, mm-hmm. you know, down there.
Did you write about that in your book?
Pardon?
Did you?
Yeah, I wrote that in my book. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the best diver down there, Jerry Coffey, he's dead now, but he was great. He said, you know, I never thought of that. And he's been in situations even worse than that, you know, mm-hmm. tangle up with sharks and everything else, you know. But we used to brag about sharks and all that. You know, it was a big braggo thing, but there were plenty. And we did some stupid things, you know. Lost at sea, you know, breaking down. Oh, God, some stories are so funny, but they're bad.
All right, well, maybe we'll keep the bad ones off the recorder if they're that bad, but let's see. Just to, I guess, bring it back to the zone.
But that's what I was telling you there, mm-hmm. is it gives you an idea of one of the adventures that we've done.
Yeah.
And other guys did just as much as me. Mm-hmm. And you would laugh, you would try to laugh at it all, you know. But everybody was scared when they did something like that. Mm-hmm. And that was a way. See, I was 4F for the military. I volunteered for the draft when I was in 1956, when I graduated from high school. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't take me because I have asthma and a couple other things. So I was 4F. So that's when I went to college. And later on in my life, after I was teaching a while, and I finally, when I quit teaching, I just started working on painting. Mm-hmm. I had 4 kids by then. I mean, I didn't have them, my wives had them. I've had 2 wives, so. Mm-hmm. Not at the same time. what are they talking about now? Oh, the Army. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know, I've seen the military all my life, seen them go by in trucks, and most of my friends were drafted. Some of them went to war, some of them didn't come back, you know. So it was something I think that I missed, that I was supposed to do. And down in the Canal Zone, people are very patriotic. We're very, mm-hmm. very. I said, I owe my country. So I went to General Warner and, told him that I wanted to do a series of paintings on the military, on the Army in the jungle or wherever. And he says, how long would it take you to get your gear together? And I said, well, about, got to drive home and get it, and I guess about 45 minutes. He says, I'll have a helicopter waiting for you when you get here. So I did 20 paintings, big oils. Mm-hmm. In fact, they just had a show in Philadelphia not long ago, couple months ago, and they had 2 of my paintings in it of the military. They were in the Pentagon for a while, mm-hmm. and they put one of mine on a banner, even one of their banners. So I put everything I had into those. I went with the grunts, mm-hmm. out in the jungle. I flew in every kind of helicopter there was. I just did everything they did, you know. And it was very enlightening to me, and that made me really, really just love the military. And we can thank God we have the men we do. Oh, geez. Mm-hmm. You know, I ought to put a sign on the back of my truck. I'm going to do it, too. Because of rednecks, country boys, cowboys, hillbillies, and mountain boys, and tough city kids, America is safe. And that's true. Mm-hmm. A lot of those guys were young and had no job, or maybe they didn't do well in school, or maybe they didn't give a damn and they went in the military or mm-hmm. something. But they were a team, and there's something about Americans that it's just, you know, it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. We have a wonderful country, and we have a great military.
Do any experiences with them in particular when you were with them doing the painting stand out? Any stories you'd like to share from that time?
Well, when something happened?
Yeah, just any, you know, any memory you might have doing that with them.
Well, I saw two guys or three guys. I don't know, one guy fell down a hill, and he took another one with him. It was like in a movie, Platoon, just like it. He took another one with him, and another one. They all rolled down the hill, you know, and one guy broke his leg, and they had to evacuate him. Mm-hmm. So, or it's coming, flying in a helicopter, and it started raining inside the helicopter through the radios and all that, and hey, we got to get back to base, you know. And there were probably more than I can remember. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, nothing ever runs on time, and I just don't know how they night fight. I don't know how they fight in that complete darkness. Oh, one time, I was out with the machine gun crew. This is all practice now. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't in a war. They'd set up the machine gun, and you sleep there. You just sleep in the jungle, you know. Mm-hmm. And the guy says, "Look at all these leaves falling around us." I looked. I said, "They're not leaves. They're vampire bats. What they do is they flutter down and they land, and then they crawl over to you, mm-hmm. and then they find a bare spot of skin or something, like your ankle or something like that. They'll nick it, and then they lap the blood." And then they can give you rabies. Uh-huh. So at least one, every time they had a maneuver, at least one guy got hit by a bat. So, but that's another one. We moved.
Mm-hmm. How long did you do that?
I did that for about 4 or 5 years. Then they sent me down to Just Cause when they had that military mm-hmm. invasion there. Mm-hmm. I went, they sent me a month later, but there was still a little bit of, you know, stuff going on, not mm-hmm. much. And so I did a lot of paintings on that, too. Mm-hmm. So I worked about 4 to 5 years on it.
4 to 5 to do
and
the 20.
And they flew me up. Gee, they flew me up. The general's plane, they flew me up. I met the chiefs of staff, you know, Colin Powell, all those.
Wow.
All those, everybody. I actually sat at the table with the men that run the wars, you know. It was something, and they gave me a show. And
I'd be starstruck.
Why?
I don't, just talking to the big, you know, famous politicians, it'd be nerve-wracking.
Oh, it wasn't so bad. They were so down to earth, mm-hmm. they were. Now, I didn't get involved in politics with them or telling them anything. I just thanked them for their, you know, whatever they did for me. But, nothing to get concerned, especially don't you ever get nervous about that. You're too pretty.
Thank you.
They will be very glad to have you around. So you just be yourself, you know.
All right. You were actually sent to Panama City in the wake of Just Cause to do some paintings within
the
city.
Well, that's where I'm from. So yeah. They gave me a car and I borrowed a gun from a guy. So then I had that in my pocket.
For protection. Did he ever have to use it?
No, no.
No.
But I'm glad I had it.
Yeah.
I slept with it right by my, in my nightstand there. Mm-hmm.
What was the city like after that when you
were
there?
Well, it was like I didn't stop for any lights. And the police force, which, see, I knew Noriega. He bought a lot of my paintings.
You knew Noriega?
Oh, yeah.
Personally?
Oh, yeah.
How what was it? Yeah,
wow. In fact, his cohorts tried to have me shot.
What? Why was that?
Well, my brother was in Army Intelligence. Mm-hmm. He was a civilian in Army Intelligence. And Noriega knew that. But Noriega liked my paintings. Mm-hmm. So he bought a lot of my paintings. He bought around 10. He gave one to the president of Reagan. He gave, in fact, if you want to verify this, mm-hmm. call the Reagan Library mm-hmm. and ask them if they have a painting there by Al Sprague that was presented by President De Espreya. He worked for Noriega, I guess. Mm-hmm. But just say, do you have a painting there by Al Sprague from Panama? Mm-hmm. You ought to do it.
Yeah.
And they'll tell you.
Google you.
Huh?
I'll Google you.
You Google me?
I'll Google you, yeah.
Well, I'll give you my email.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah. Because I'd like to see them. Did Noriega contact you directly to buy your paintings?
Yeah. In fact, one time, let me see if I got anything here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. And my last one. Good.
Let's see.
That's my card. That's one of my Ooh. Paintings of the canal. But, you know, I hate talking about myself.
I understand. But this, I mean, this oral history, it's really about, I understand that, you know, you feel uncomfortable doing that. But, you know, we're interested in hearing your story. So, okay. I mean, this is really interesting.
The bottom line is the website.
Okay.
But up there you see SprayArt at AOL.com.
Yeah.
That's my email.
Okay.
All right. And when if you write, what's your name?
Candace.
Candace. Mm-hmm. Candace the interviewer, or Canal Zone interviewer, okay. or something. So I know mm-hmm. who it is because you get all kinds of stuff.
I do too. Yeah. Definitely junk mail and stuff like that. But thank you so much. This looks really neat. I like the colors. Everything.
Pardon?
I like the colors. Could hang that up.
You like colors?
I like the colors in the painting. It's
if
it's kind
can
of
you
the,
turn that on? A friend of mine, Jimmy Reinhart.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I knew him in school, and I used to have a couple of, when I quit teaching, I had some of these students of mine, you know, we were good friends, and they go to my foundry. I always had a foundry. I've been casting bronze for 40 years. Mm-hmm. So we would go and we would pour bronzes and have a good time. Well, he was helping me one day, and I got a crane now because I can't lift that stuff anymore like that. And the crane started, well, you have a shank, it's a ring. Mm-hmm. And on one end, it's just a rod, and then the other end is a rod with two handles.
Mm-hmm.
So you put the pot in it, and then the you have a hanger that comes down and grabs it, and that lifts it up, see? And then you take it over with the crane, and you pour it. Well, what happened is there was a lot of, we had to skim the top, a lot of metal and all that, and when the shank came up with the crane, here was the pot in the middle, there was a little piece of slag that got caught between the ring mm-hmm. and the pot. And it tipped the pot over, and it was 90 pounds of 2,000 degree metal on the floor. Boy, you went that way, and I went this way.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there are all kinds of things happen like that.
How do you even remove that once?
Pardon?
How would you remove it once it's set and dry?
You know what I did? It chills. It gets cold, and we cut it up on the bandsaw, mm-hmm. the pieces, and I melted them again, and then we poured it, and I got it.
Mm-hmm. It's like hot lava.
Well, you see, and the method I was using is a plaster, mm-hmm. plaster and sand method. If you don't, once you burn out the wax that was in it, mm-hmm. if you don't do that, if you do that, you have to pour it within a day or it deteriorates.
Mm-hmm. That'd be terrifying.
Now, I went all over the world just about. I went to Florida. I went to Panama. Any place I could find anybody doing anything in Panama. I went to Italy with my wife, you know, and to learn how to do foundry. So we went all over the place, and that's what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned you don't do a lot of selling. It's just really...
Oh, my wife does.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, she and my daughter, she's here. She's selling a daughter by my first wife. But I never thought I'd ever end up with a couple of wives. But, you know, it's a strange life.
Did you meet both of them in the zone?
No, I met my first wife in the United States. Mm-hmm. Very good woman, a very wonderful person. Mm-hmm. And things didn't work out. But we had three children, two boys and a girl. And the girl's here selling now with her daughter and her husband. And then my second wife, we had a little girl who's going to be 30 next year. So, but they're all pretty brilliant, and they've done well for themselves, except for my son Michael, who I worry about him because I want him to be able to, you know, he's doing what he wants to do, though. And he's got the education. I'm his father. I worry about him, you know?
That's just what you're going to do. Can't escape it.
Don't your folks worry about you?
I hope they don't, but I'm sure they do.
Yeah. Are you the only one, or are you...
I have a younger brother.
Younger brother?
Mm-hmm. And he's doing well.
You got to worry about... How old are you?
I worry about him. 22.
22. Oh, they're worried about you.
Yeah. I hope they don't worry too much.
Well, you can't help it. Can't help it. You know, especially the mother. Mm-hmm. Are you good friends with your mom?
Yeah.
Yeah,
really
that's
close.
Great. Mm-hmm.
Well, so, I mean, your experiences as an artist sound like you've had a lot of really interesting opportunities to interact. I mean, Noriega buying your paintings, that's crazy.
Well, he told me, when I went to see him, I was in a dentist chair. And the dentist got a call, a Panamanian dentist. He says, "Hey, Sprague, I don't know what you did, but the big man wants to see you." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Noriega wants to see you. You better get going." So he packed his stuff up, and I got out of there and went home and changed into a guayabera. Mm-hmm. I got pictures of all this, too.
Yeah, I'd love to see
them. But they're not here. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I could send them over to the internet.
That'd be great to see.
But anyway, I went upstairs to this commandancia in Amador, and he wasn't a very tall guy. Mm-hmm. I was a lot taller. I lost 4 inches with my spine. But I knew that he wouldn't speak English. He could speak English, but he spoke Spanish as a matter of pride. He would only speak Spanish. So I said, "How am I going to do this? Because my Spanish is terrible, you know." And so I said, "General, con mucho gusto." And I started fumbling around with my Spanish. He said, "Sprague, we'll speak English." And I knew my Spanish was bad. So he told me, he said, "I've sold your..." He says, "I want you to know that," he says, "you should be very proud that Panama likes your work this much." He said, "But Panama is very proud to have your work, too."
Hmm. Did you ever paint anything just for him?
Well, he just liked my paintings. Poyeras. He really was a patron of mine, in a way. I didn't ask him to buy them, or you couldn't. I mean, he was a dictator, you know. I never had any bad... dealings with him, or any kind of dealings with him. Just met him there face to face at one time. Then he said that he gave paintings to Mitterrand in France, President of Mexico, President of Spain. He just went on and on and on, all these people that he gave. He says, but the one I was so proud to give a painting to was Anthony Quinn. Have you ever heard of him? He was an actor. He got the Academy Award and all that. Have you ever seen the movie Zorba the Greek?
No.
Well, he was in that. And he, old actor like old me. But what happened is I had a show in November, just a month before the Just Cause. And a friend of mine who was a bodyguard of Noriega's, he was a bodyguard to the ambassador to Japan, Albert Calvo, who I went to Balboa High School with, who should be in our class, but he's been very sick. Mm. But Mario is a great big black guy. You couldn't help but like this guy. He was magnetic. He was full of pep. He was just so great. He'd drive a car and just, oh, God. Yeah, I don't know how he got out of some of those things. I just and one night we were coming back from the airport, and he gave me the pictures that they took of Noriega and me at the airport. He met me and drove me back to my house. I had my kids with me too, the three other ones and my wife's cousin, mm-hmm. all the kids. They come back. And in the summer, I'd take them all out fishing. I had a big boat that I built, and I'd put them on the boat, and we'd go. But there was an outbreak halfway back from the airport, and they were turning cars over and burning them and throwing rocks, and they were shooting, and everything was going. All that nice stuff to make you feel calm. Well, we finally get up, and we turn up this road. He's driving. He's trying to dodge. He's not going to burn my car. And he pulls up into this road, and it's blocked off with the burning car, and guys coming at us with torches, and we're blocked off from behind. So this guy comes up, walks up to the car, one of the Maliantes, and he puts his head in the car, and Mario reaches behind and gets his nickel-plated or stainless steel 357 Magnum and goes, pow! Just like in the movies, he cracks his head so hard, it could sound like a coconut. The guy went, bloop, down. Then he got out with the gun, and it was dark, and I heard a couple of shots. I don't know if he shot anybody or what, but torches went up in the air, and he got back in the car, and we drove, it took us an hour to get out of that. Anyway, he was faithful to the regime, though, Mm-hmm. Well, when I went down there in 89 for a show, November 89, see, in December 89 is when they hit Noriega. Mm-hmm. When I went down there, after the show, he came up to me and he says, hey, Al, I go anywhere with the guy, He says, hey, Al, come on, let's take a ride. So I said, okay, so we go for a ride. And he says, Al, they're going to kill you, man. I said, what? He says, yeah, Noriega wants you dead. Actually, it wasn't Noriega. It was one of his underlings who didn't like me. And he thought I was a spy because my brother was in intelligence. I never told my brother a thing. I got all my information from the maid. I never said, I knew that my phone was bugged and I only said good things, I shut my mouth. I know how to do that. So he says, yeah, he says, but he used Noriega, used the name, and I said, well, he says, and finally later on he admitted I was trying to make you say something against Noriega, so I'd have something to. Anyway, he says, Al, I'm gonna. So he starts driving the car, and I said, ah, come on, Mario, quit joking with me. So he gasses the car, and we're going down a little road, almost a single It was double, but you had to kind of go off in the grass to let the other guy by. People were jumping off the side of the road and everything. He was going so fast. Finally, I said, hey, Jesus, we must have been doing 90 miles an hour. I said, Mario, God, man, don't kill me. You know, you're going to kill me. And he goes, pulls out that gun, cocks it, and puts it up to my head and says, I'll kill you right now. And I tell you, it's like pinpricks all over my brain and body, you know. And there you're looking death right in the gun. I didn't know what he was going to do. He says, I'll tell you, you better listen to me. He says, I'm going to take you back to where you are in the zone. And you stay there and you get the hell out of Panama. You can't go out by the airport. You go out by the airport, they're going to get you. He says, the only way you go get your general friend or whoever you can to get you out military. Mm-hmm. And he says, I swear, Al, they're going to get you and they're going to put you in jail with Muse, the guy that was already in jail, or they're going to kill you, one or the other. They think you're a spy. So, man, I said, okay, I promise, you know. So he drove me home, and my brother helped me get and I got the General Max Thurman, he got me on a plane. And what was funny was when I got to the airport at Howard Air Force Base, mm-hmm. when we had that in Panama, I was standing, I went up and I have beard, you know, and should be clothes. And this little Air Force guy, you know how to, now I do that. But he says to me, what's your name? What do you want? I said, well, I'm on the plane, on the manifest. He says, what's your name? Sprague. Al Sprague. So no Sprague on the manifest. I said, well, you got to have a Sprague on there. They told me I was on the manifest to fly out on this plane. No Sprague. I said, well, let me have that phone there, please. I want to call the general. I had his number, too. Mm-hmm. He says, only Sprague we have on there. How common is Sprague? He says, the only Sprague we have here is a Captain Sprague. I said, that's me. I'm Captain Sprague. I didn't know they're going to put me down as a captain, you know. But I said, went along with, I'm Captain Sprague, you know, I'm Captain America. What the hell? No, I said, I'm Captain Sprague. He says, boy, they have all kinds of spooks running around here now, you know. Anyway, I got out. So.
Mm-hmm. Was it hard to transition? Move to the States after?
Oh, no. I miss Panama a little, and I miss it a little, but, you know, I like living where I am. I get to make all those things. I cast bronze. I meet all kinds of people. I'm getting near the end, you know. I know that. And, I mean, maybe I got 10 years. Who knows? If I'm lucky, maybe. But I'll go as long as, you know, we all know we're going to go as long as the big guy tells us, you know, and then we're zipping off into another realm.
Another new adventure.
It is. It is. It's definitely. How pompous of man to feel that this is it, that they're the brightest of everything, and then there'll be no more. Not very smart.
Well, I mean, that was an incredible story. I'm just trying to get the name straight. Was Mario the bodyguard to the...
He was the bodyguard to Albert Calvo, who was the ambassador to Japan.
Okay, all right.
Under Noriega.
Okay.
And Calvo bought a lot of paintings for me. He was a great guy. He was a bridge champion the world over. I mean, he was one of the world's best bridge champions.
Did you guys ever play a game?
Oh, I can't play cards. No. I don't have the patience to play 5 minutes fish. Mm-hmm. Do you ever play fish?
Yeah, and it's about the only thing I can do with cards, too, I think.
I don't like games. Yeah. I like to make things.
I don't have any patience, I don't think, for any of the games.
Really?
I don't like waiting my turn.
What do you like to do?
I read a lot. I do a lot of writing for school, but reading, I think a lot of editing? Writing, just for school, but I think
that's great.
Reading and that kind of consumes
you most like of my daughter, Dagny.
Yeah.
Her and I just wrote a book together. Well, I wrote the book back in 1966 for my seventh grade class.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got copies of it here. Not here, but I wrote the book, and what I did is I was teaching English, and
mm-hmm.
I wanted to give the kids something extra, so I wrote a story in my own time that I read to them if they were good. I read them a chapter, or not a chapter, but as far as I had done, you know, on Friday. And then I show them whatever illustrations I did. There are kids that are adults now I'm selling the book over at the
vendors.
Yeah, the vendors. Mm-hmm. If you go over there, I'll slip you one. I'll give you one. The kids that are now, what, they're in their 40s, 50s, some, you know, they're. So anyway, Dagny edited it. It's my little girl.
Mm-hmm.
She edited the book, and she did a beautiful job. And she's brilliant. Like, I'm sure you're like just like her. 11 years of age, she edited some of my filthiest stories. But they weren't all that bad. They're just bad, that's all. But I did the illustrations, and it got published by a publisher, and it just won a. It was in a finalist in this some kind of award or something.
Hmm.
So it didn't get the award, but it was the ten books that they chose. You know,
mm-hmm.
So that was kind of nice for a first time.
Yeah. How much have you published besides that? Because I know you mentioned.
That's about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm working on another book and.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse my
That's okay. My
speed. I always draw wherever I go,
mm-hmm.
and or I get ideas. I have books like you know, I write, put down stuff for casting bronze, you know, and mm-hmm. making different things, machines that I need. And we've got a fish and lure business going in Panama. We're making fish and lures from the lures that I invent.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and are they produced and sold in Panama?
Yeah, they're.
Oh wow.
Yeah, they are. But we're going to get them in the States too. Mm-hmm. You know, if we can. In fact, I'm taking some to Alaska with my daughter Cassie.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go to Alaska and try them out on the salmon and on the halibut. But these boys, this buddy of mine and I, Bob Hummer,
mm-hmm.
and I'm Willie Deal, and he's Bob Hummer. He's Bob Hunter
mm-hmm.
in this book. Anyway, it's called Windswept, and these guys get blown out to sea in their sailboat, which happens,
mm-hmm.
and it capsizes and everything, and they end up on a log. Floating out at sea, a big tree, and which we see all the time out there. Big trees wash down the rivers, and they drift around, and all the dolphin and
mm-hmm.
becomes the center for life out there. And then here's a guy petting a whale shark, and he slips in, and the two of them end up on the back of the whale shark, you know. And then here they are diving off the log when it hit a reef,
mm-hmm.
and there's this tiger shark that had followed them.
Mm-hmm.
So the tiger shark gets after him, and both of us have been in the water with some big tiger sharks in our life, and we're still here. But here's the tiger shark, you know, and then the shark likes to have his nose scratched, and then they get on an island, they're feral dogs and everything, and then the sharks, and oh God, I mean, and they find a little puppy in a coconut shell, so and then here he is scratching he's on his floating log, and they just cut away the water, and he's scratching the nose of the whale shark, you know. And it's just, you know, then there's fishing lures and fishing mm-hmm. lures, and as I go on, this is you know, a pianist, if they're going to be a good pianist, mm-hmm. they practice every day. Well, everywhere I go, I bring my sketchbook. Wow. If you want to look through it, you can.
Yeah, definitely. So you guys are actually...
I made the book, by the way, too. I taught myself how to make books.
Bookbinding.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever do that?
I haven't, but I there was a high school class that offered that.
You ought to do it.
Yeah?
You ought to do it, really, because you can take your own writings mm-hmm. and bind them, and you can make some neat stuff.
Be neat to do. So this free diving and going out, that was kind of a big, you know, social kind of cultural thing in Panama. Were a lot of people into that?
No, not a lot. A lot of them, not a lot.
Uh-huh.
I would say a very small percentage of the gringos and Panamanians did it. Mm-hmm. Panamanians some of them were excellent. Mm-hmm. And they were good divers, you know, but they kill everything. Rah, boom, boom, boom. You know?
How did people really get along, you know, with the native Panamanians?
Oh, everybody. My God, they. Uh-huh. You know, a lot of the Panamanians went to American school that they could pay the tuition.
Right.
And they're close friends, and some Americans don't even they go to Panama to go into Panama. Mm-hmm. They don't have any ties with the zone.
Right.
So, Panama and the Canal Zone are a lot closer. I mean, Americans are. Now you had some Americans. Granted, you had some Americans only went into Panama to buy a lottery ticket, you know, and they only had, you know, lousy stuff to say about Panama. But most of your Americans got along fine with Panamanians. Mm-hmm. My family, my dad, some of his best friends were in Panama, mm-hmm. you know. So.
Did you have a lot of Panamanian students at the school where you taught?
Yeah, we had quite a few, mm-hmm. and there was intermarriage too.
Yeah,
you know, girls would marry a Panamanian guy, or a guy marry American would marry a Panamanian girl. We're married to each other, Panama and America.
What about for children? You know, because children can be cruel. Were Panamanian kids picked on or teased or anything like that?
No,
as far as
no,
you saw?
No, I tell you, the best fighters were Panamanian and gringo.
Mm-hmm.
A mixture, mother Panamanian, father gringo, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
They had that Spanish temper and American size. They beat the out of anybody, you know.
Mm-hmm. What about intermixing? Because I know there was a West Indian presence too.
Oh, that was my first language. I taught that. I hear that when I'm 3 years old. My mama gave me to the maid. Her name Lin Man. And Lin Man take me all over the place and show all her friends this little white boy. And they see I'm blonde hair, you know, and they touch me hair and kiss me face. They kiss me face all over, and I come back, and my mother say, "What? I see all that, look at that different kiss marks on him face there. I'm lipstick all over them. I see purple and pink and blue." They all kiss me up. They were. I learned how to talk that.
What is, can you give me the name of that?
Well, we call it Bayesian.
Yeah.
In the Canal Zone, people call it Bayesian, but mm-hmm. a lot of people call it Creole.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes from, Bayesian comes from Barbados.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, most of the workers who dug the canal were Jamaican.
Right.
If it wasn't for the black man, that canal would not have been dug, because they were the ones that could take it. They took the disease, they took the accidents, and they were strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they needed the money. And then they brought over their families. Or they met a wife and they raised a family.
Mm-hmm.
The woman that worked for us, that raised me from the time I was 11, her husband dug on the canal.
Mm-hmm.
He was
mm-hmm.
one of the diggers. He was a little older than her, about 20 years older.
Yeah,
I
was doing the math in my head, because I know they completed construction, I think, in 1914.
Yeah.
Right. So.
But she told me, I said, "Well, Louise, I can see you love your children." She says, I love all my children and all his children too.
Mm-hmm. Did the maids live in house?
Or no, they lived at home in Panama. Mm-hmm. We just lived on government pay.
Yeah, because I know it was government housing and.
But they came from, some of them came from men who worked for the canal, but a lot of them came from Panama. Who's, like I said, her husband was retired from the canal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or they came from Panama, but. When you hire a maid, you must watch out for the wife, because if you hire them too pretty, they're gone. I have a friend that hired three women in one day, and his wife got rid of every
said
one.
Said no
of them.
Because they were too pretty.
And finally hired a real ugly one. She stayed with her family for 100 years.
Mm-hmm. How did the process work for hiring maids? Did they?
Well, they just come to your house.
They come and okay.
And if you needed, but I hated to call them maids. But what the heck? That's what they say. You need a maid.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be a good maid. You know, I can't do this. I can't cook. My dad and Louise, they were both about the same age. They're both dead now. But anyway, Louise and my dad would cook every Saturday together. My mom, I don't know where my mom was selling insurance or encyclopedias. Mm-hmm. She put me through college, my mom did. But my dad and Louise cooking all day Saturday. That's what they call it. Saturday, Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And if shrimp is shrimps.
I bet it was good cooking.
Oh,
what kind
my
of
dad
food
was
they
a
make?
Good cook, but he taught Louise how to cook.
Okay.
And she put the Jamaican cooking with it, you know. Mm-hmm. Back and forth.
Were there any dishes favored by the canal zone? I know I'm trying to recall
the
name.
The greatest favorite.
Manzanetti, maybe something.
Favorite was Johnny Marzetti.
Johnny Marzetti, that's what it is. Okay.
And it was made with Alfredo mm-hmm. sauce, mm-hmm. salsa Alfredo or something like that. But when you'd have a big party, you know, they'd have Johnny Marzetti,
mm-hmm.
and that was a big deal. And the canal zone parties were great, but they were wild.
Did they get a little too crazy?
They got crazy, you know. And a lot of men and women there, you know. Yeah, they got kind of wild. I remember one time I haven't had a drink for 35 years, but when I was back in my drinking days, I was young, and we were having parties and all.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to a friend's party, and I see the party, you know, so I'm going to pull up and park in his lawn, you know, because I couldn't see, there were cars all over. So I pull up, and it had been raining, and I pull up a little too fast on the lawn. I hit my brake, and I skidded, and all the houses are up on stilts, you know. I skidded right through the bushes into the party. You know, and I didn't hit anybody, thank God.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even his party, so I stayed. I met new friends.
Oh, my goodness.
But Zonies were, they still are. They all talk Bajan, you know. You talk to them, they say, hey, what you doing, man? What you doing? You know, and in this book, the character, old man, he was a real character,
mm-hmm.
and he used to take me fishing. He's a black kid. He's mm-hmm. about 5 years older than me, and we go out and get sea worms and all kind, you know, adventures. Oh, I was only 10 or 11 years old.
And you were allowed to just go out because I know it was it's
don't come back.
Really safe.
Yeah, it was pretty safe. You know, what wasn't safe is what we did. Not worrying about you didn't worry about. You know, some molester or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we were such devious kids that I pity any molester who tried anything on us.
Mm-hmm.
We'd find some way to get him. Mm-hmm. We did some bad things.
Does anything stand out in particular?
Well, we were throwing firecrackers at people one time in the car. And these cherry bombs, they got them with a wick in the middle, or M80s, what they call them.
Mm-hmm.
The military use them. We threw I threw one out, and it was, car was packed with all the, about eight guys in the car, you know, and it hit the top of the window, and it bounced back in the car, and everybody was trying to find it.
Screaming.
Boom!
Oh, my goodness.
But one time, we went down to the tuna boats used to come in, and they dock. Along the dock, they refuel and resupply. Mm-hmm. And we used to go down there, and this was the old tuna fishermen. They used live sardines or anchovetes, anchoveta. And they had bait wells on the tuna boat, and they were about 100 feet long, maybe, the tuna boat. And they had racks that they'd put over the side, and the men would stand in the racks, and the guy up at the bait tank, he would throw sardines out, a net full here and a net full there, and the tuna would come in. Mm-hmm. And then these guys in the racks had these poles with hook on them, you know, and they'd pull in these big tuna. And sometimes they had one pole, two pole, three pole, four pole tuna. Four guys pulling up tuna this big. And you'd see, if you want to write down what it looked like, if you want to write down a tribute to tuna, mm-hmm. that you'll get that on an email. I'm not an email, okay. I'm on a computer. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can watch it for free or what. A tribute to tuna. Mm-hmm. That will show you just what we knew those guys. So say we come into Balboa Harbor to resupply. Well, we go down there and use their live sardines for bait. Right on the boat, we get big snapper and mackerel, and we caught big fish. Oh, man, I remember trying to sell them one night. We got shot at and everything. But anyway, that was...
Somebody
that was
shot at you for trying to sell tuna?
Yeah, we had a... No, we were racing... We were, I don't know if I should tell you this. We caught a bunch of Corbina, a buddy of mine and I. And we went downtown to sell the Corbina, and everybody was closed. So Corbina is the prize fish down there. So on the way back, he was speeding. We didn't know. We were talking about where we're going to sell the fish. And we passed this checkpoint. Going by, cop blows his whistle, and we just goosed it, you know. He did, boom, pow, pow, took two shots at us. And one went in the trunk of the car, and the other went across the top, creased the top. But we stayed in the car that night, and we slept in the car, and waited for the YMCA to open up the next day. Mm-hmm. And the man there was Harry Chan. He was he ran the restaurant. Probably the nicest man in the world ever. His daughter comes here, Bev Williams. She mm-hmm. got and all of her family comes. But Harry was Chinese, and he was just wonderful. He'd say, "You come in to sell fish or something, you know?" And he'd say, "You boys look hungry. Go on back and get something to eat." You know, he was just a good man. You know? Mm-hmm. And he said, "Well, I give you 17 half some pound, you know, for your Corbina." So anyway, we waited the next day and then sold a Corbina to them. They were still good, had them on ice and everything. Mm-hmm. But we had this bullet went through the trunk, you know. Mm-hmm. So he says to us one day, "Hey, what you catch those fish with? I just find bullet in fish." I think with fish saved our lives, man.
Yeah. God, that, oh my gosh.
One time we went down there and they were to the tuna boats and they said, "We're going to leave, but we have a bunch of undersized tuna we have to get rid of. Do you guys want them?" "Do we want them?" Well, it's not like we took advantage of the West Indians living in La Boca, because we gave them a fair deal and these tuna were fresh. Mm-hmm. We sold them for two tuna for a quarter, and the tuna were this big. Mm-hmm. You know, there was enough there to feed two families in one tuna, you know? So we sold them two for a quarter. And we just put them in the trunk, filled the trunk up, and it was a borrowed car. Mm-hmm. I wrote this down anyway. Anyway, we go into La Boca, and we open the trunk and start selling fish. And we made so much money so fast that, man, we went back to the tuna boat, you know? So this time the guy says, man, we're pulling out. This is it. We're pulling out, you know. But you got about 20 minutes and we're gone. So they took the tuna and they filled up the trunk and we put them in the car. In the car. It wasn't our car. And they rolled up the windows and we're stuffing them through the window. We had the car and one guy was in the back. He said, hey, I'm suffocating. I'm freezing to death. You know? And so every time he turn a corner, all those tunas slide up and bury him.
Oh, my God.
He's screaming, you know. So we went and we opened up the car.
And tunas tumbled.
And we sold all them. And we got out of there and we pulled up next to a light to get this car back, you know. And we pulled up next to the light and this car pulled up next to us. A guy got in a sports car with a girl with him, you know, and he looks over at us, we look over him, you know. We had fish guts all over us and everything, and slime. What's with you guys, you know? It's fish, tuna. And the girl goes, mmm, mmm. Yeah, he pulled out of there in the light. So we got the car home, and this poor guy, the guy that he borrowed the car from was there waiting for him. He was a soldier, you know, and he liked his sister or something. They had some kind of a fight or something, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But he saw his car, and man, what a chase that was. He left the car and run. Mm-hmm. And old Bob ran through the swamp for about 2 days. This guy wanted to kill him.
Yeah, how old were you?
I was 16, mm-hmm. Something like that.
Somebody brought my car back full of fish guts. I don't know how I'd react.
Oh, we wouldn't have done that to a girl.
Did a lot of kids have their own cars?
Well, I destroyed three of my dad's.
All right.
You know, it was the same. Hey, can I have the car? You know, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I mostly walked, but in high school, I didn't have a car in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And but only when I got out.
Was everything compact enough so it was easy to get around, on foot or with a bike or something?
We used to walk
that.
To school every day, and it was about a mile.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it wasn't far, you know. And even in when I was little, you know, there's the school, and it was about probably a half mile down the road, and it was a straight walk to school. You'd walk to school. And you run back with all the bullies after you, after school.
It sounds like it was a really amazing life and a great experience.
Oh, it was always something happening.
Yeah.
We used to crawl underneath the piers.
Mm-hmm.
But we used to crawl underneath the piers. Slimy barnacles. Mm-hmm. You know, the tides would go to 18 feet. We climb under there and we get a spear gun. I remember this buddy of mine and I, the same guy. We had more fun together. And we had one spear gun between us. We both owned it. And I take a shot at a fish, and, you know, get a fish. We put them up on the side of the pier, you know, underneath the pier, it slopes. So put them up there, and then you go back, and he got a shot, you know, and then I got a shot. Well, he's looking around there, and we're way out underneath the pier, almost to the front of the pier, because we knew how to climb around all the pilings and all that. And no human being would want to be underneath there, you know. I mean, it had rats under there, all kinds of lizards, big lizards, like the black lizards.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Anyway, he's looking, and I look like, wow, you see this great big grouper, just huge. If we'd have shot it, we'd have lost the gun anyway. You know?
Yeah.
But that doesn't go on in your head as a 16-year-old kid.
You want that
kid.
Fish.
Yeah. So I was so excited I couldn't talk. I just grabbed the gun. he grabbed it, and we're fighting over a loaded gun. I just, no. And pew, the thing goes off. Mm-hmm. It ricochets off. It's just going off all over under the pit. We're like going to get killed with that thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the grouper went down. And that was it.
Not today.
But we did stuff. We used to walk on the piling. The camels, they were this thick in moss, and you had to walk a certain way. I'm good at walking across slippery floors if I know they're slippery.
Yeah.
You know, you got to learn how to walk. Everything is very deliberate, you know. I've caught fish on my fishing rod and gone skidding all the way down there with the fish pulling me. Mm-hmm. And Hummer was always a big guy. He'd grab me by the scruff of the neck. But well, you see, that's another thing is that I went for the adventure part,
mm-hmm.
you know, and like I said, I was a little kooky, so I didn't have the romance in my younger years, you know. I didn't, like a lot of these guys went steady with a girl and all that.
That costs a lot of money and takes a lot of time, a lot of effort into that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I would have loved to have had a girlfriend, I think, but mm-hmm. you have to spend time. You know, you can't go fishing all the time.
Mm-hmm. She will say no to that. No, you're spending time with me.
But the fish used to be so much. There used to be so much fish. It was, you could kick them up on the beach sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing.
Hmm. So, I mean, you've had some, you know, pretty incredible experiences there and must have emotional attachments to it. So when you hear the news that it's being, you know, turned back over to the Panamanians, how did you take that?
Well, at first I don't care for Carter. I didn't care for him for anything he did.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one of my paintings in his library, though. Panamanians bought it from me and gave it to Carter.
Mm-hmm.
So they did think enough of me to do that, of my painting anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad that they have it now. I think they're doing a very good job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're doing fine. Mm-hmm. And I think they'll continue to do so. They have glitches now and then, but so do we.
Yeah.
No, they'll do fine. But old Big Brother USA is keeping an eye on it too, though. If anybody tries to mess around with it, we're in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the deal. Because it's vital to the world.
Yeah.
Because
absolutely.
If you can't get through the canal, you got to go around the Horn. And if you ever read any books on the Horn, that is horrible.
Mm-hmm. Difficult to navigate.
100-foot seas,
mm-hmm.
one after the other. They call them graybeards.
Mm-hmm.
They lost many lives there. And then, or you could go through the Suez Canal. But the Suez, you see, they're always having trouble over there, so that's not a stable place either.
Mm-hmm.
So you better keep the Panama Canal open.
Important, or an asset. Yeah. When you relocated, you mentioned you missed it, but it wasn't, you know.
Well, I missed it, but you know what I did? I said to myself, look, Al, there's nothing you can do about it. Miss it, but look for the good things here.
Yeah. Did you continue to teach up here?
No, I quit when I was down there, too.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to think of what we haven't covered yet.
Oh, we've covered everything, I think.
Yeah, it's been a great interview. Thank you so much for your time. Oh. Do you have anything you'd like to add, any closing remarks?
Well, my brother say, man is man and woman is woman. If them don't that, then what them is?
I like that. I've got to make it down to Panama sometime.